Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, December 16th, 2015. We have Wendy Wilson joining us right after the market report today. Good afternoon, Alfred.
What up, Melody?
Hey, well, guess what? It was like waiting to see if somebody was having a girl or a boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yellen, Janet Yellen. Finally, yay, a quarter point. We'll talk about that after Wendy's on the program
today.
Yeah,
this was like an Alfred Hitchcock production.
Oh,
the Master
Lord.
Of Suspense. It only took us 8 years to find out if she would or she wouldn't raise the interest rates.
That's probably why the markets are up so big today. There was just a sigh of relief. You know, now we can go on, move on to other things until they start talking about when the next one's going to be in 2016.
But we have to wonder whether it's reasonable for the markets to go up given that the interest rate goes up. But we'll talk about that after we get, in the second segment of the program.
And another thing we'll be talking about today is the massive spending and tax deal that was where Congress has reached an agreement, a $1.1 trillion spending bill that'll be heading to Barack Obama before everybody goes on Christmas holiday. So first, let's get to the market. Everything was up strong today, even gold. We had the gold up currently at 1210, up strong this morning, and followed through. Had a little bit of weakness right after the announcement of the rate increase, but it clawed back. 1,074. Silver's up 40 cents today at $14.26. Platinum was up almost as much as silver, up 20 bucks at 878. Palladium up 4 at $574. Crude oil didn't manage to be up today, 1.67 down at 35.68. USDX today was up 0.13. I figured that'd have a bigger day than it did, 98.32. And the paper markets today, bear with me, folks. I think everybody's on the internet today because everything is running slow today. The Dow was up 223 points initially after the rate. It actually was down. It went up triple points this morning, came back down to like 25, 35 points. Now it's 223 points to the upside, up a little over 1.25%, 17,748. The NASDAQ back up over 5,000, 5,071, up 75 points. That's 1.5%. The S&P, 2,073, up 29 points, also at 1.45%. 10-year yield, 2.29%. That was up just a 0.02. That was higher in earlier trading. And the euro got a little pressure, 0.25 to the downside at 109. And, of course, European markets, Japan was up big, almost 3%. Hong Kong was up almost 2%. London and Germany was just up fractionally. And, again, we'll be talking about these numbers, about the rate increase. But first, we have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. Hello, Al.
Hello, Wendy.
I thought we'd talk about how much rest does the body need to do any healing. Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, we're getting into that hectic year, so people aren't getting as much rest as they should. But getting quality rest goes beyond, you know, how perky we feel or how good we look. Our heart, our brain, our entire metabolism relies on rest just as it relies on food, water, and oxygen. So we can actually speed up our healing process and boost our immune system when we get the right amount of rest. And so that's within our ability to do. So when we rest, Al and Melody, our brain is able to think more quickly. We have better memory recall. And a lot of physicians, as you probably know, have harmed many a patient due to sleep deprivation, okay? So getting good, constant rest also, according to science, will influence our longevity. So research is stating that if we cheat ourselves with only 5 or less hours of rest per night, it will increase our risk of death. So we've been hearing a lot of medicine that thinks that diseases are linked to the inflammatory condition. Well, guess what? Research now points to sleep. Getting good sleep reduces the likelihood of an inflammatory disease like heart disease, stroke, diabetes, arthritis, and premature aging. So if we get more than 6 hours of sleep, Melody, Al, each day, we can actually derail some of the inflammation that the body may develop. So there's this link between people also with insomnia and sleep apnea. They tend to have blood pressure and heart conditions to go with it. Now, there was a 2010 study where there was this correlation between the C-reactive protein in heart attacks and that went up if you had less than 6 hours of sleep per day consistency. And as you know, rest does relieve our stress level too, right? So lack of sleep affects also, get this, our appetite. We feel hungrier than normal if we don't get enough sleep. New research is affirming that we can sabotage our weight loss program by not sleeping. University of Chicago did some research on this, and they said that if you don't get enough sleep, you won't lose as much weight. So if you do get enough sleep, your weight loss will improve by 56%. So if you're under sleep deprivation, though, they said it prevents your body from getting rid of the fat, but it will create a loss in muscle mass instead. So Dr. David Rappaport, New York University Langone Medical Center Department of Sleep Disorders, he says this: sleep and metabolism are controlled by the same sectors of the brain, so when you are sleepy, certain hormones go up in the blood, and those same hormones drive your appetite, end of quote. So if we get sleep, we'll have better weight loss control, okay?
All right.
All right. Now, here's the big one from
Wendy, that's because you can't eat when you sleep, right?
Well, hey, that's why they call it breakfast. You're breaking the fast, okay?
True.
Okay, so there's this big study now, getting into some meat here, from the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. They said if you're lacking adequate sleep, you can make up the shortfall with a nap. They found that you can reverse the negative effects of less than 6 hours of sleep with a short 30-minute nap. So the nap, they said, reduces the cellular stress on the body and will boost your immune system. So just 30 minutes of snooze time, they say, reverses the negative hormonal impact on the sleep deprivation that's created. And it kind of resets your biomarkers, they said. and specifically your neuroendocrine marker to normal levels. So just a mere 30 minutes can increase your levels, if you're a man, by 2.5%. So that's important. So research is also mentioning that the lack of sleep reduces the interleukin 6 protein level that is part of your immune system's ability to fight off viruses. So if you're not getting sleep, you're more vulnerable to viruses. So so this time of year with cold and flu and all that, it's real important to get some sleep. Now, Harvard Medical School also said, you know, people are, you know, throwing down the caffeine, the alcohol, the energy drinks so that they can stay awake because they're sleep deprived. But that's not working. And according to the research, the more sleep deprivation you get, the more likely you'll have depression. So antidepressants are up 400% within the last 10 years. And according to Dr. Sanjay Gupta, she says, we're an overstimulated society. Our technology and instant gratification has kept us from resting. And she says this overstimulation stresses the cells and enhances the aging. And she calls this America's hidden epidemic. So I think rest is becoming a real problem for even high school kids and kids in middle and elementary school. They're just not, they're too distracted with all this technology. So they sleep with it too, which is not good. So
I can understand that. I would imagine that, you know, I can remember kids wanted to take their toys to bed with them when I was a kid. But our toys right? didn't keep on running. All right? It might be that I like Robbie the robot or whatever my little toy was, but the truth is, he went to bed and it went to sleep too. All right, there wasn't anything going on. That's not necessarily the case with some of the toys that children have today, particularly if they get close to anything like a cell phone or whatever, a tablet, computer tablet.
All that blue screen
that thing
technology.
And taking her to bed and keep you up all night.
Right, that's the blue screen technology. A lot of neurologists and optic neurologists say it's that blue screen that influences the circadian cycle of your wakefulness and sleep and just gets you all out of balance. So, we have a little bit more for you. The National Institutes of Health also did a study on the influence of rest on your immune system. So the amount of rest will influence how strong the potential of protection that your immune system will give you. So if you don't have any disturbance in your normal sleep and wake cycles, called their circadian system, you'll have a stronger immune system, they said. So the amount of rest that you get influences the number of anti-inflammatory or psychotine cells and also the killer T cells that the immune system actually produces. So research says that resting impacts the immune system through these cells, but science isn't really completely sure how this is all working. They do know that normal sleep redistributes the T cells into your lymph nodes. So rest will impact the interaction communication between the different immune system cells. So your immune system likes getting rest, and it helps regulate what medicine calls your immunological processes. So according to Dr. Eric Prather at Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, University of California School, he says our study reveals a clinical relevance in the role of sleep and how the immune system functions as a whole. And they get into this whole thing, Al and Melody, about these cellular clocks that your body has, and they're all interconnected. So if one clock is disrupted, it's going to influence the other ones. And so medicine says sleep is probably the linchpin of disrupting those circadian rhythms within all your systems or your clocks. And medicine is recognizing that getting adequate rest creates a synergistic action within the circadian system. And it helps the body exchange or share signals through hormones, neurotransmitters, and proteins. And and here's something that was really interesting. Your immune system uses the peak wake and sleep circadian rhythm of your rest to improve on your immune system capabilities. And this makes perfect sense because when you're sick, what do, Al?
Watch TV.
No. You sleep. You take naps. You probably take a lot of them during the day because you're tired.
And I do that even when I'm healthy, but...
Okay, well, okay. But when you're asleep, typically people take little short naps, maybe an hour or so, but it helps the immune system to make more killer T cells and macrophages.
I understand that.
Yeah,
you know,
so...
Well, here's another story that supports what you're saying, mm-hmm. but it supports it from a different direction. This is up at Mercola.com, and the dangers of sleeping too much. They say seniors who regularly slept more than 8 hours per night had a 46% increased risk of stroke compared to those who slept between 6 and 8 hours per night. Now, there's more to this, and they're also arguing it affects depression, diabetes, weight gain, health, headaches, heart problems, and whatever, sleeping too much. And the point, then, is we apparently have some kind of a narrow range of how much sleep is proper. And if we don't hit that range, you go too much, we've got a problem. Go too little, got a problem.
Yes,
sleep
you're absolutely
is important.
Right. Yeah, and real quick, if I could squeeze this in, there are a number of drugs. There's the top 10 drugs that disrupt your sleep cycle, robs you of that rest. They're the alpha blockers for blood pressure, the beta blockers for blood pressure, arrhythmia, angina, and so forth, corticosteroids, SSRI antidepressants, ACE inhibitors, angiotensin II receptor blockers, cholinesterase inhibitors for memory loss and Alzheimer's, the second-generation antihistamines, and the glucosamine and chondroitin dietary supplements, too, and your statin drugs will interfere with your sleep cycle. Okay?
And by sleep cycle, you're talking about we go into alpha and beta and so on, and we're not just talking about how many hours we sleep. For example, you can take sleeping pills, and you do sleep, but do you get a quality sleep out of those sleeping pills? Do they actually, are they conducive to good sleep, or are they give you a kind of phony sleep? Do you know?
If you asked a neurologist, he'd say no. Just ask Michael Jackson's doctor, who had to give him an anesthesia to get some sleep. Although he woke rested, the brain doesn't get to go through those REM cycles of sleep. And after about 50 episodes of that, the neurosurgeon that testified at his trial said that the brain just shuts down and death occurs. So your brain has to cycle a circadian rhythm. It has to go through it. So without it, you get sick. So if people want to boost immune system for the holidays, and, you know, because if they don't want to miss the events, and if they're eating too much sugar to suppress immune system, they should counter with some immune-boosting herbs, and we can help them out. The number's toll-free at 866-229-3663, or they can visit us online at thepowerherbs.com.
All right, Wendy, we've actually got about 50 seconds left if you'd like to add any more. If not, we can break loose, do some commercials.
Okay. My clock must be fast. We do have this week 15% off if somebody wants to stock up or save, you know, because we will have this Christmas break coming, and then, you know, they can't call us during the Christmas holiday. So if they want to stock up now, they can save 15% this week online. The code for that in the shopping cart's on the homepage, or they could just call and mention the Christmas special, okay?
All right. Sounds good, Wendy. We look forward to talking to you next Wednesday. And that's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com at 866-229-3663. We're going to take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
A heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. easy to use and portable in a 1 pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. The program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, we said we'd be talking about the rate increase today, and she did, in a two-day meeting out of the FOMC and the Federal Reserve, and they raised rates, interest rates, for the first time in nearly a decade. The yield on the 10-year note rose a little bit to 2.30, as I mentioned earlier, and it was raised a quarter point, so the range will be 0.25 to 0.50. I think some of the banks have already, two major consumer banks, they didn't waste any time in raising rates on their products for the consumer. JP Morgan and U.S. Bancorp already said that their prime rate would rise, the quarter point percentage to 3.5% effective tomorrow. Let's see what else was going on. You get some great information. Actually, Yahoo released an interesting little article. And it's funny, there was a Bernie Sanders, you know, he's the only one who said that this Fed rate hike is going to hurt American workers when millions of Americans are working longer hours for lower wages. The Fed's decision to raise interest rates is bad for the working family. And he wants
that. That might be true, but it's good for retirees in theory because they'll make a little bit more money on whatever they've invested, whatever's been invested in their pension funds. In theory, the retirees will benefit. Mm-hmm. Creditors will benefit, and they've been robbed for a number of years now with these artificially low interest rates. Haven't been able to get a fair return on the money that they had saved one way or another and prepared to invest. And I'm not just talking about banks, I'm talking about individuals who actually accumulate wealth in the old-fashioned way. They save it. Now, they should be better off under this thing. It's not going to be a big change, but it should be a positive change for them. It will not be a good thing for the people who are already in debt. Right? It may not be a devastating problem for debtors. It may not even be a noticeable problem for debtors. We'll wait and see. You know, remains to be seen what sort of domino effect, if any, is going to come out of this. But if interest rates are going up, then people who are already in debt, they may find themselves in circumstances where they're paying a little bit more on their debts than they might otherwise have done. They don't get to pay off with cheaper dollars. So, I don't know. No matter what you do, there are winners and there are losers. And you do something else, there's just a different set of winners and a different set of losers. Now the question is, how much do the winners win and how much do the losers lose? And is it enough to disrupt the cycle, disrupt the economic system to any significant degree, or is it just much ado about nothing? What do you think? Is it going to be much ado, Melody, about nothing? Or do you think this is going to have a noticeable effect over the course of the next several days, weeks, or months?
You know, we're in the Christmas holiday. Everybody's going to be gone. There's going to be light trading. So you could see some big swings in either direction because of that. You could also see swings just based on, I don't think what we're going to see until the end, until January, is going to be a reflection of the true impact of the quarter point.
I think you're probably right.
So, and what I found interesting about what she talked about is that she says it was time for monetary policy actions to affect future economic outcomes. She says that if you don't raise the rate now, they have no place to go for a recession. If there's a recession, they can't do anything. And her speak was almost to the point, or it sounded like, you know, a recession is coming, so we have to raise them just so we can lower them when that recession gets here.
That's the implication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And there's another implication. When, insofar as she says that, it implies that she does not believe in negative interest rates. She's recognizing you can only take it down to zero, and you can only take the interest rate down to zero. You can't go negative. And so if they want any sort of tool that they can use in the event of another recession, they're saying, we've got to raise interest rates well above zero so we can actually lower them back towards zero in the event. But she's implying that they're not prepared to go to negative interest rates.
Well, they basically created some negative interest rates without actually
making
it official. Without making it official. And so again, it's just another psychological game that everyone is playing.
Compared to the inflation rate, and you can wind up with a de facto negative interest rate, but not an official
where they say
we're going to pay minus 1%. Now, they're not going below 0% on the payment, although as a practical matter, depending on whether you're in inflation or deflation, you might still have a negative interest rate, but it wouldn't be official, if you catch my drift.
Yes. Actually, they're expecting about 4 rate hikes next year. But maybe fewer hikes are possible, and, you know, that'll be the next debate for the next until they do it again. But she did lower expectations as far as the economy. The expectation for the economy didn't change much, but the amount of increase in rates was lowered from what she had initially stated. So, again, her outlook and her statements and some of the things she said doesn't seem like, it's going to be the strong economy that they've been preaching for so long. And again, it's an election year, so.
Well, it's an election year, and on top of everything else, we are in uncharted economic territory. We're in positions that the world has never seen before. There's really no economic history that can easily guide us on what government can do under these circumstances, what the Federal Reserve can do under these circumstances. Everything is up for grabs. That's the reality of this thing. Nobody really knows exactly what's going to happen. And this is a crapshoot right now. And it's interesting because the people in the Federal Reserve and people in central planning for this country, and that's what it really is, central planning, right? They don't know what they're doing. Right? They have guesses and they have theories and they sit back and they conjecture about these things the same way you and I do on this program from time to time. But they don't really know. They say, I wonder if this will work. Let's try this. It's like me at the control panel of an airplane, and the pilot has died or whatever. And there's someone sitting who's taken the pilot seat and said, I wonder what would happen if we push this red button over here. Well, maybe a good thing, maybe not a good thing. You know, you need to know what these buttons do, and no one really knows right now. So again, there is an element of uncertainty here, and it's hard to know if this uncertainty is, what's the magnitude? How uncertain are we, Melody? I mean, once you get to a point where you say, gee, I don't know for sure what's going on, well, how uncertain are you? If you're really uncertain, then you better get some gold. If you're just a little bit uncertain, well, maybe not. You know, maybe it's not so necessary or so advisable. But when you recognize you're in a period of uncertainty, significant uncertainty that no one can exactly define, describe, can't say what's the magnitude of the uncertainty, what do you do?
Well, I think everyone had expected gold to fall today, and I figured there'd be a little bit of pressure, but you had a lot of short covering that kind of reflected in the price gain for gold and silver. Silver kind of followed gold today. And, of course, if everyone's talking about a better economy, then you could, see platinum and maybe the industrial commodities move a little bit to the upside, which I think we saw in platinum and palladium. So the whole sector moved up for any, given reason. So you could still see a little more volatility in that. But, the fundamentals are still, I mean, I hate saying it, fundamentals are still there. I mean, it hasn't changed now. We're just in extreme markets, and people would have to be insane not to protect their purchasing power without gold and silver. But
One of the things that I'm beginning to understand, and it's been running across my mind, I've been just beginning to enter my mind in the last week or so, it's the idea that in the existing markets, which are manipulated, right, the markets are supported to a significant degree by the actions of the Federal Reserve. And so far as the Federal Reserve, and this isn't a debatable point, this isn't an irrational point or hyperbolic, it isn't radical, this is the truth of the matter. They have had zero interest rate policy for last 6-7 years. They've had quantitative easing for much of the last 7-8 years. All right? These are all attempts to manipulate the market, mm-hmm. to allegedly sustain the economy. But if it weren't for quantitative easing, what would the market be today? What would the Dow? Where would the Dow be today? Would it be up near 18,000, or would it be closer to 8,000? You look at this and you begin to realize the obvious, and that is I will say the major investors in the stock markets and bond markets have been there because of the Federal Reserve. They have effectively invested not in the markets. They don't care about the fundamentals. What are the fundamentals on IBM or General Motors? Well, we don't care about that. What we're investing in is, did Janet Yellen say or not say the word patience? If she did, the markets will jump, right? Several hundred points. If she didn't, they might fall. If she raises interest rates, we are going, oh my gosh, the markets may go up. Or if they don't, if she doesn't raise interest rates, oh my gosh, they might go down. We are effectively investing right now. Investors are investing in the Federal Reserve, right? I had an article here from Pains and Gains, and they point out pretty much the same concept. They're talking about what investors have been doing is front-running the Federal Reserve. And this parallels Janet Yellen has, they've said they have three tools. They have interest rates, they have quantitative easing, zero interest rate policy, they have quantitative easing, and they have forward guidance. All right? And forward guidance is where the Federal Reserve comes out and they drop a couple hints and they say, well, 60 days from now or 90 days from now, we're going to raise interest rates or lower interest rates or reinstate quantitative easing or terminate quantitative easing. Well, the investors have been investing in the markets. They've been front running. And the Federal Reserve has been saying, well, this is what we're going to do in 60 days or 30 days, maybe. And the investors say, I think they're really going to do it. And they invest accordingly. They're not investing in the fundamentals of the stocks. They're investing in what the Federal Reserve is able and willing to do to sustain the stock markets and the bond markets and effectively guarantee profits. And that's what they've been doing. We've gone from, 7,000 points on the Dow back in 2009, February 2009, if I recall correctly, 7,032, something like that, in February of 2009, up until 17,000, pushing 18,000 today. We hit up over 18,000 in February of this year. I think it was 18,132. Now we're down a little from that. From 2009, when they hit that low, 7,000 and change, until February of this year, 2015, when we hit 18,132, if I recall correctly. All right, we've had a steady rise in the markets. Why did that rise take place? And everybody understands that it was largely precipitated by the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve made that bull market. Since February, what's happened to the Dow? It's actually gone down. We've had a downslide. I don't remember how low it went.
It was down from the 18 and In August, September area, it was down 2,000 points.
All right, but it's popped back
10%,
up.
Yeah.
Now we're up to near to 18 mm-hmm. points. The market has been, you could sit back and say the market has been down or at least stagnant since February this year. That suggests that the Federal Reserve is unable or has been unable or is unwilling to continue to stimulate the market and artificially prop it up. All by itself, that flat line, if the investors have been front-running the Federal Reserve, and they say they're going to do this, so let's invest this way. We can make a buck because the Federal Reserve is going to raise, lower interest rates, keep them the same, do whatever. They've been front-running the Federal Reserve for the last several years. If the Federal Reserve can't move the market up or down, if they can't, people are going to sit back, we can't front run the Federal Reserve because the Federal Reserve is not doing anything of significance anymore. Once that happens, I have to wonder, and I know I'm just speculation, but once it becomes clear that the Federal Reserve is no longer moving the market up, it becomes evidence that maybe the Federal Reserve can't move the market up, which means we can't invest in the Federal Reserve, which means, oh my gosh, we're going to have to go back to free market fundamentals. And that inevitably means the market is going to go down. All right, now I'm not sure if that's made much sense, but it's been up since 2009. The Fed has laid the foundation for what has been a bull market in the stock market. It's been basically more or less flat, a little bit down on average for the last 11 months. It indicates maybe the Fed Reserve has run out of, they're out of arrows. Now they're trying to shoot an arrow with this raising interest rates by 0.25%. So we'll watch and see what happens. But main point I want to get across is the idea that people have been really investing in the Federal Reserve for the past several years. They haven't been paying attention to stock fundamentals. We find the fundamentals are associated with the free market. Fundamentals got nothing to do with a manipulated market of the central planners at the Federal Reserve. Fundamentals, what do they got to do with that? All matters, Federal Reserve, they're going to issue more money or lower interest rates or whatever, and thereby stimulate these markets artificially. So there's a perspective here. Is the glass half empty? Is it half full? Are we investing in the pronouncements of Janet Yellen at the Federal Reserve, or are we investing in the fundamentals of the stock and bond markets? And I think we've been investing in the Federal Reserve. And you can look at that. And if it turns out the Fed can't continue to stimulate and artificially hold this up, we can't invest in the Federal Reserve anymore, and we're going to see probably a significant decline. Let's take a break. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're absolutely correct as far as, you know, how the Federal Reserve has front-run the stock market. And you have these multinational corporations who took advantage of those low rates. They borrowed at, you know, didn't cost them anything to borrow, and they in turn used that money in order
That's right.
to buy their, you know, their stocks back and to provide dividends. You're going to see these dividends. We've already, and look at the oil industry. Mm-hmm. You know, look at all that borrowing, all that debt that the oil industry went into because of the low rates. And now they were put in a position where they're going to be defaulting on a lot of that debt. So yeah, in many areas like that, they front run. I mean, we haven't even talked about some of these emerging markets about how, you know, the rate increase will affect them. And so, you know, perhaps we don't see on the top coating of what this move in this quarter point will make immediately. But I do believe there's things that run a little bit deeper, and you're going to see changes. And it doesn't mean you're going to see these knee-jerk reactions where the stock market drops 300 or 3,000 points because they increased it a quarter point. No. But I do think it will create a lot more volatility come next year, and this is the beginning of it. They're changing the status quo. You know, the whole world has been based on, you know, the whole world has been based on low rates for so long. Now they can't do it anymore. And so you're going to have to see a whole different change in the way business and markets and manipulation has been done. So it's
we've seen the markets, the stock markets, for example, over the past several years have been largely supported by corporations that are buying back their own stock.
Yeah.
And they're buying back their own stock because they're able to borrow money at basically at near 0%. They're able to borrow money at an extremely low interest rate.
That's
and
why,
use that money to buy their stock. But
that's why they have
once
so much
we raise
cash.
Interest rate just a little bit, we can wonder, will the corporations continue to borrow more money to buy back more stock?
That's
and the answer is probably is at least not as much. And if they don't, that means less demand for stocks. It means less investment in stocks. And this is where the potential danger is, at least so far as I'm able to understand. They raise interest rates. We're not going to buy as much stock in this country, at least not on credit. That means the stock market is probably headed downward. All right, demand is going to diminish. And the only reason, and it also means additional to this, the demand we've seen over the course of the last several years has been largely based not on people looking at fundamentals, oh, the economy's in a state of recovery. It's been on, can the Federal Reserve continue to artificially manipulate the markets and essentially guarantee profits? And if they can't, then it's maybe time to get out. So we'll watch and see. This is going to be interesting, but we're at a teeter point here, kind of. And
well, you also have all these major multinational corporations that are holding all this cash on the sidelines. So I don't know if the quarter point was enough for them not to borrow. The rate is a quarter point to 0.50. So, I mean, before
it was
zero
evidence.
To a quarter, so they could still be getting it out of, you know.
Well, I understand they can still be getting it cheap, but they also have to look into the future, and they have to say, look, how far do we want to go with this? This is
but
evidence that the Federal Reserve is going to tighten lending policies rather than loosen it, which is what they've done over the past 7-8 years. All right, and if this is the beginning of a trend where it's going to become more expensive to borrow, then even though it's not too expensive yet, sensible people are going to sit back and say, we need to stop buying our stock now.
Well,
right? We need to stay out of this. We need to look for another policy. And so, blah, blah, blah.
Well, my point was we have all that cash now. These multinational corporations are holding all that cash on the sidelines. Will they use it? Will they begin funneling it into the markets? And what type of impact will that have?
But one of the things they could do is they could start, instead of buying their own stock, if they have cash on hand, they could actually use it to expand their business rather than to buy back their stock.
Which is?
What do you mean, which is?
Wouldn't that be a little inflationary?
Well, it might be inflationary. It might even be
stimulating. It might just be enough.
It might turn out to be a good thing.
It might just be enough that the Federal Reserve needed in order to get their projected inflation to 2%, although I do believe inflation is much higher than 2%, personally. But if you use their figures and what their projection is, perhaps by loosening up some of that cash that's sitting there and, you know, putting it into the system, it would push their rate, their inflation rate, closer to 2%. So we got a caller. We got Joe from Arkansas calling. Good afternoon, Joe.
Yeah, good afternoon, Melody. You know, I just wanted to say this on what you all are talking about, and that's that I would think that the reason the Fed can't stimulate the economy anymore is that, okay, if they're going to stimulate the economy by injecting money into the economy, that money has to circulate from hand to hand inside the country so that people get income, so that a lot of people get some income from it. And nowadays, money doesn't circulate so much inside the country anymore. I wouldn't imagine that most of the time, you know, when somebody gets some money, they go and buy something, and the something they buy is produced in a foreign country, and the money immediately goes out of the country. So it doesn't circulate inside the country to create income for a lot of people. And then another thing would be the taxes are so much higher, like Obamacare is a huge expense for so many people, for everybody now. And taxes in general are so high. The government has got so greedy and the government is so huge. So as soon as the money is injected, you know, people have to pay their Obamacare taxes or some other tax, so the government sucks up that money. And again, it doesn't circulate from hand to hand inside the country to create income for a lot of people. And I suppose if people buy into the stock market, then immediately the company that they buy the stock of takes that money and transfers it to some foreign part of their global operations, because that's how all the big companies operate now, is globally. And so again, the money doesn't circulate inside the country. So I would think that that's why the Fed can't stimulate the economy now, no matter how much money it injects into the country. into the economy.
How could the money, what can we do to make the money stay in this country?
Well, we could do what we used to do, and that's have a mostly self-sufficient economy, have tariffs on imports, do things to make it more attractive to do business in this country, you know, lowering taxes and cutting regulations and so on like this. Just create a lot more self-sufficiency inside the country so that Americans buy and sell from each other rather than doing business so much globally. And I think that would marvelously stimulate the economy. For instance, you know, there's a lot of things
that people... I don't know that would be enough. I don't know that that would be enough, Joe. I think part of the reason the money, insofar as the money has tended to flee this country and go to other countries, I think the reason it's done so is because our interest rate is artificially low. Imagine that I were a reasonably wealthy man and I had $100 million to invest. Do I want to invest that $100 million at 2.5-3% here in this country, or would I prefer to invest it at say 5 or 6% over in a foreign country? When we have zero interest rates, when they say, oh, we're going to help you, the poor people, by setting the interest rate at 0%, well, that's very nice if you can find any rich people that are willing to lend at that rate. The creditors are going to say, I'm not lending my money out to for 0%. Are they crazy? I'll move my money out of this country. I'll put it in a foreign country that's paying more interest rates. I think the low interest rates have driven money out of the country. I think insofar as they raise interest rates, I think this will be the big effect, is they will begin to attract money back into the country, and that in theory may stimulate the economy and may, who knows where we go from there. But I agree we've had a problem with money fleeing this country. I think what drove it out was low interest rates. It fled the United States for countries that paid higher interest rates. And as we rebalance that and say, wait, we're going to raise interest rates in this country, we'll see more money coming in. We may see economic stimulation as a result of raising the interest rates. And if that's true, we have to wonder, what has the government been doing for the past 6 or 8 years with a zero interest rate policy? Are they just too dumb to understand that low interest rates drives currency out of the economy? Or have they been doing it intentionally? So, we're here to help the poor people. It'll be cheaper for you to borrow money, except there won't be any money to be borrowed. Are they with us or against us, Joe? Do you have any idea?
Well, as far as what you're saying, I don't know the exact numbers, and that might be part of it, but it seems to me that the economy is basically people buying and selling the needs of daily life from each other. And that's always the biggest part of the economy, and you know.
Yeah, but here's one thing with that. That's a proper philosophy. If we have an asset-based currency and we are paying cash, if I come to your store and I buy a hammer and a chisel and some cement in order to make some repairs around the house, all right, I'm buying, you're selling. But what happens if I come with a credit card? All right. I'm making a purchase, but what I'm really doing is maybe borrowing some money in the first place and then paying it back in 30 days. We're not simply buying and selling. We're borrowing and, in theory, repaying before we can buy and sell. I don't know if that makes much difference or if you see what I'm groping at right now, but buying and selling cash, fine. Buying and selling credit, first order of business, before any buying and selling takes place, there's borrowing. All right? And if you can't borrow, insofar as borrowing is restricted, inhibited, I don't mean that it's ended, but in theory it has to mean less buying and selling. So my point is that maybe borrowing plays a bigger role than buying and selling, if you catch my drift.
Well, if people are earning, then they don't need so much to borrow.
If the money was circulating
inside the country more, so that people were earning more money, so that you know so much money wasn't being sucked out of the country or being sucked out by government, then people would be earning more, and they wouldn't need so much to borrow to buy things. But the main thing that the borrowing seems to me it would do is it would keep the debt growing continuously. You know, if people are always going into debt to buy things, the debt's going to keep growing and growing and growing, and that's going to drive up the price of everything, and you know, and people people aren't going to be able to buy so much eventually because, you know, servicing the debt is going to take consume a bigger and bigger portion of their income.
It's part of the insanity of a debt-based monetary system. The fundamental form of wealth in this country is debt, which is insane. It's crazy. All right? We are using debt as an asset. The primary debt form, the most exalted debt form in this debt-based monetary system, are the bonds issued by the federal government. And if you look at that and you say, look, they admit to having $19 trillion in national debt, and the national debt could be over $200 trillion, according to some sources, they can't pay it back. And the whole system is based on the idea that the U.S. Treasury bonds are the safest investment in the whole world, and they have taken, supplanted the position, the place of gold. And they say, oh, there's nothing safer than a U.S. Treasury bond. Wait a second. How much do they owe? And how are they ever going to pay this back? And if they can't pay it back, it means the bonds are not the least risky investment in the world, and they're nothing but debt instruments in the first place. I mean, this whole system is built on insanity and sand. Right? It's a house card built on a foundation of insanity that's located in the sand on a tidal flat. You've got to sit back and say, this isn't going to work forever.
I can see that this debt-based money system is destructive, but even if we did have gold and silver money, if the government deliberately enacted policies, you know, to discourage people from producing anything in this country and to make it so that we pretty much had to buy everything from foreign countries, then the money would still flow out of the country. We'd still have a very depressed economy in this country, and I think that actually happened in the late 1700s. You know,
and
we had gold and silver
and
money.
What have they done to inhibit production in this country? One of the things is in the last decade, 15 years thereabouts, they've moved American industries and jobs into foreign countries. How can we produce without the tools? You know, I mean, the government has stripped us of the tools we need for production, and so it can't be a surprise that we are nowhere near as productive as we were. Now what? How do we work our way out of this? Not just because we're not producing. It's one thing to be lazy, it's one thing to be stupid, but when you don't have the tools needed to produce, now you can't produce even if you get smart. Not easily, at least. It'll be a while before we get back on track. We're out of time, Joe. I want to thank you for your call. We will be back tomorrow on Financial Survival. I want to thank everyone for listening. Melody and I, again, will be back tomorrow. I hope you'll tune in then. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, the producer, and Joe. Bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. Money, 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 always funny.